Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you're thinking to myself, that's not a female artist, producer, lead singer, that's because it's Trans-Siberian Orchestra Day today on The Maggie Dawn Show. I am so happy to be joined again by Al Petrelli, one of the founding members of TSO. They are on a big old tour right now. Going to be back in Wisconsin later this month. You're not going to want to miss all that good stuff. And we had Al on before. Boy, is he an interesting cat. If you wondered how heavy metal music and Christmas tunes came together, Al can explain the story of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Not going to want to miss that. Keep it locked in here, folks. Tomorrow I'm going to have on Molly Dubin, the curator at the Milwaukee Jewish Museum. Happy Hanukkah, everyone. We're going to be celebrating a bit with Molly tomorrow. Don't miss that. They've got a really incredible show going about a particular medium by which women artists contribute to social dialogue. I'm super excited to talk to Molly. Today there's a lot going on that I hope to get to. But there were two bits of sound that I just simply can't help myself. They're apropos of nothing. I just think, oh my goodness, I cannot believe these people say these things and mean them. And the first one is our very own Ron Johnson. Boy, that guy. I mean, what are Ron Johnson's qualifications to be a senator other than being a rich guy? I mean, it's not like I've never heard anything from Ron Johnson that I'm like, oh, I'm smarter because he's shared that deep searing insight with me. Well, so too here as it happens related to our democracy. Ron Johnson never lets the fact that he has not availed himself of relevant information, facts, history, or reality stand in the way of him proffering up completely unfounded, unmoored, ungrounded, and totally irrational opinions about things. And here's what happened when he was getting interviewed just this past, I think either yesterday or on Sunday. Check this out, everybody.
To go, Senator, I do want to ask about this. Obviously, it's your home state. 10 Republicans who signed paperwork falsely claiming that Trump won there in the 2020 election have now agreed to withdraw that paperwork, acknowledge that Joe Biden did win the election, and also agree to not serve as an elector in the 2024 election or in any election where Trump is on the ballot. But there is one person who still serves, Robert Spindell, in a state agency that is responsible for administering elections and certifying the results. Do you think that he should resign from that, given the role he played in the fake elector scheme?
No. Again, there was an active court case. There are all kinds of irregularities in Wisconsin in the 2020 election. And in order to make sure that the case just wasn't determined to be moot, they had to have an alternate slate of electors, just like Democrats have done repeatedly in all kinds of different states. There was nothing untoward about what they did. There was nothing illegal about what they did. They were just an alternate slate of electors.
They were going to court. They had $2.4 million on the line in damages if they lost this case at trial. That's why
I realize Democrats
wrong.
Have used the civil courts to harass these poor individuals. It's unfortunate. It's a travesty. But that's what Democrats do. They view politics as a blood sport. It was unfortunate. These folks did nothing different than what many Democrats have done in many states throughout
our
history.
Senator, I mean, there were multiple slates of fake electors, including in your home state. They're acknowledging that they were playing a role in trying to improperly overturn the election. That's what they said.
They got themselves out of a nuisance lawsuit. They agreed to settle a nuisance lawsuit that never should have been brought.
So you think it's fine that someone...
lawsuit. It's a travesty of justice.
You think it's fine that someone who tried to overturn a legitimate election is still on a board?
Democrat electors have done that repeatedly. Democrats have done...
Which
Democrats
one?
Have done the same thing. Republicans have tried to criminalize
it. Fake slates of electors?
No, it's happened in different states.
I didn't come prepared
to give you the exact states, but it's happened repeatedly. It has happened repeatedly. Just go check the books.
Which books?
I mean, there have been alternate slates of electors by Democrat electors in our history. Again, you didn't. This wasn't what this interview is going to be about. I'll come and I'll provide you the information, but I'm
absolutely
certain about that.
Okay, I look forward to your office sending that information. We'll publish it if it's accurate.
That.
Senator Ron Johnson, to go, Senator.
Oh, ouch. Let's fact check, okay? Because she did a pretty able job of it, didn't she?
Can we say her name, too?
Yes, please.
This is Caitlin Collins, and I am now a huge fan of hers. I am right? loving, right before she said which books, under my breath, I was like, oh, yeah, which books? Which and books? She said which it books? On air. I love that.
Finally, the follow-up question, like, there were fake elector slates before in Wisconsin. When? Who were they? There were lawsuits that alleged this where people agreed that they broke the law. Democracy is a nuisance, sir. Which books? Best line of 2023 goes to Caitlin Collins just under the wire, everybody. He's just making it up. Here's some books, Ron, Rojo, that I want to go to. All of the deposition transcripts from the Dominion lawsuit. Let's read those books, because there's books of deposition transcripts. Where everyone at Fox News is like, yeah, this is just total garbage. Sidney Powell's a nutcase. Giuliani is off his rocker. This is made up. This is not credible. Debating whether or not they should say that. Because, oh my God, they're going to lose the far right, which isn't the far right anymore. It's the right. And here's Ron Johnson trafficking in more lies and nonsense without the ability to back up any of his statements. You think that when you're accusing the opposing party of mucking about in democracy, you would have something better to say than check the books? And this interview wasn't supposed to be about that. Oh, you asked me a tough question live. There's so many things that are wrong with that. Every time he speaks, there's so many things wrong with that. No, mouthwash does not cure COVID, Senator. No, it's not okay to say it's fine if all the people in Africa die from climate change and all the people on coastal land in the United States die because it's not Wisconsin. You idiot. I mean, I don't even objectively forget the politics of the moment. Does that person in that interview not sound like a total moron? Texter weighing in, Johnson is so full of the brown stuff. The false documents are a felony. Yep. But that's a nuisance lawsuit. It's a travesty of justice, sir, that people met in secret in the Wisconsin Capitol after the Wisconsin Supreme Court had rejected the legal challenges and doctored up some fraudulent documents, which you then were ready to hand over to the Vice President of the United States on January 6th, which then amounted to an armed insurrection fomented, encouraged, and directed by the former President of the United States that by all accounts lost the election, that's not had a single valid legal challenge to anything that happened in 2020 that would impact the outcome whatsoever in the least. There weren't election irregularities, sir, in the state of Wisconsin that are any different than every other election cycle. They hired a hack who listens to Mike Lindell to go investigate it. His name is Mike Gableman, who violated the state's open records law, which is supposed to be our mechanism to ensure that our government officials and special prosecutors like Mr. Gableman are actually doing what they have been tasked to do and paid for by taxpayer dollars. Not a whit of evidence. You're a senator. Have you no shame? By the way, Rojo doesn't know that the legal drinking age in the state of Wisconsin is 21. Do you think the man has any idea what a gallon of milk costs? Do you think he's been in a grocery store in the last 20 years? All right. Sound bit number two that I just can't help but to listen to part of. If you haven't heard, Tucker Carlson is being floated as Donald Trump's potential vice presidential candidate. Here's what happened when Megyn Kelly asked him about it.
Got to ask you, and I want to talk politics too. This was very interesting. Trump went on the Clay and Buck show. I know you've heard about this, and maybe you haven't because you don't really tune into the news. And listen to the following exchange, top three.
So would Tucker Carlson be on your list of potential VPs?
I like Tucker a lot. I guess I would. I think I'd say I would because he's got great common sense.
Oh, I know you get asked this all the time, but I mean, if asked, would you serve?
Well, it's just so unimaginable. I mean, I haven't led a life that prepares a person for politics. As I said, I don't think I have any like horrible skeletons or anything. It's not that. It's just that's not how my brain works. I've never done anything like that. I can't imagine spending time with
politicians.
Okay,
we can wrap this up here. I've not lived a life that prepares me for politics. Sir, you've spent the last 20 years of your life talking to politicians and about politics every day on the air, telling the American public what to think about a whole ream of public policy issues. And then oh my God, that's his subconscious talking very much out loud when he's like, it's not like I have any skeletons in the closet. Oh my God. No one suggested that, Mr. Carlson. But it seems to me you very much absolutely do have, if that's the first thing, if you're my, well, first of all, I'm incompetent on the subject matter, even though I tell people that they should listen to what I'm saying about it. And by the way, I've never done anything that I wouldn't want my mother to know about or that would be on the front page of the New York Times. Yay. Tucker, everybody. By the way, that Johnson's lies have to fly on this, the Maggie Dawn show, or the devils shouldn't have him back. I couldn't agree more. I dare you, sir, to come on my show. Dare you. Pick your topic. I will eat your lunch. Anytime, anywhere, sir. Let's go meet out by the bike racks after school. Argue about politics and public policy. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Come on, join us. 844-967-2789 and go get that app. You can take us everywhere during the holiday season. It's free. Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here with my producer, Anya Esther. Give me a call. What do you make of Ron Johnson's nonsense? I mean, here's what. Forget the particular politics of what he was talking about, right? Just for a moment. Does that sound like an intelligent person getting interviewed about an important subject of the day? In my mind, if you're going to say something that's pretty extraordinary, like Democrats have engaged in fake elector slates and do the same criminal things, I would be armed with some facts to back that up, right? Like, shouldn't that be a sort of minimal requirement if you're going to say those kinds of things? Live in a TV interview or on the radio? I mean, I don't get on the radio every day and just, I'm going to make up a whole bunch of stuff. I've sourced it. I'm reading things. Rojo, read things. Read actual information from primary sources. Do you remember in grade school when we were all introduced how to do research and like what a primary source was and a secondary source? Like, sir, go do that. I think those should be requirements of elected officials. You say incredible things, whether you're Donald Trump, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, whoever it is. You say incredible things, and your office can't provide immediate substantiation for the assertions that you make in live radio. The broadcaster should have to qualify it. And I mean like real time. Your staff is watching. You better be able to send it in. This is the problem. I just want to shout out Texter Steve for the great idea that before Rojo gets on the Devils again, he had better come face me. I love it. Mark from the SAC also sharing that basically any of civic media callers would be able to eat Senator Johnson's lunch without much of a sweat. I agree, because you're so well armed with, you know, facts and information. Isn't that nice? It's just too much. And yes, there's rhetorical flourishes and exaggerations and things that happen in political argumentation. I'm not talking about that. He basically said, well, they do it too, so it's fine. Okay, sir, site one. Couldn't do it. And just as a point of fact, I don't remember a bunch of Democrats storming the Capitol during an electoral college vote. I don't remember that. If someone out there knows that we did that in modern American history, give me a call, 844-967-2789. I also don't know that I've ever seen folks from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin gather in secret, guarded by Capitol Police, in the basement of the Capitol building on the day that Wisconsin is supposed to submit its electoral vote count, and falsified documentation that's supposed to look like the real deal, and then pass it along to a Democratic senator on the day that Democrats storm the Capitol while the again, if I'm missing that somewhere, someone call and correct me. Now, today I told you I would give you a little bit of a download of this really interesting red state governments telling blue cities what to do. And I may have to close the loop on some of this tomorrow, but let's get started. I mean, certainly we can start in the state of Wisconsin. Act 10. Then magically, you know, like residency, and you can't do that. It was a state law. Act 10, no more public unions, gone. There's state statutes that tell local governments we can't enact more stricter gun legislation than what is at the state level. The sales tax package had restrictions on what Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee can now do. It basically stripped the city of Milwaukee's citizen oversight board of the fire and police departments of all of its actual powers. They enacted a state law that basically said that maybe when they decide so, the Republican-controlled legislature can step in and actually, like, run MPS. That existed. So we've had a long and storied history of these things after Scott Walker got elected. Of course, the hypocrisy here is that when it comes to the federal government, right, Republicans will be like, you can't tell states what to do. We get to tell women what they can choose for their health care. That's a state right thing. And by the way, every time you hear the term states' rights, I want you to think Jim Crow and taking away rights of historically oppressed groups of people. That's what states' rights means. Sort of came up when Reagan announced his candidacy back in 1980. He did so in the county seat in Mississippi, where the 7 civil rights workers were killed. I wonder if that was an accident. Did they know that that's where they were? Of course they did. So let's just look at some pretty extraordinary examples of this. And again, don't worry, I'll wrap this up after we talk to Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and I'll wrap it up tomorrow if we don't get to all of it. So Ron DeSantis, for example, helped get past various sweeping measures that provide all kinds of powers to the state attorney general to pursue election-related crimes. you know, Ron DeSantis also enacted that it was like sort of weirdly defined election fraud and then sent out like local police departments to investigate it, which basically scared black and brown people about potentially voting. And they didn't come up with a single case. I mean, yuki. They also got passed in Florida legislation that requires cities and counties to suspend any locally adopted law if someone sues and simply alleges that it is incompatible with state law. So all you got to do, folks, you don't like the law, just whatever the merits, you know, even if it's baloney, just sue and say that it might be incompatible with state law, and magically it can't, that those local laws can't take effect. What? He's removed two Democratic prosecutors. It's happening in Louisiana because, you know, New Orleans is a majority minority city now, using the nomenclature of yore. So Louisiana Governor-elect Jeff Landry, he's created a committee led by a local GOP political donor and businessman to address public safety and other issues, but just in New Orleans. I'm sure that'll work out well. Yoy! And he's threatened to withhold state funding for New Orleans water infrastructure until the district attorney agrees to prosecute women who violate the state's abortion ban. That's lovely, isn't it? We'll loop back on this, but for a moment, let's take a pause. And we're going to bring in our good friend Al Petrelli of TSO to tell us all how their tours go and join the show. 844-967-2780.
A child stands alone and she's waiting. And the light that's out there just hangs in the air, as if it was just hesitating. And the snow, it comes down, muffles the sound of dreams on their way to tomorrow.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am broadcasting from the WAAU of the K, but you can hear us all across the state. And I believe that we are being joined from the Big Easy by none other than the Maggie Dawn Show's good friend Al Petrelli of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Hey, Al, how you been, man? You've been on tour for a while.
I'm doing great. It's so good to hear your voice. How are you doing?
We're real good here. It's a little chilly here in Wisco land. What's the weather doing down there in NOLA?
I think it was, I went out this morning to get coffee. Sunny, 60. I'll take it. You know, a couple more days in the south, and then we're going to be wiggling up that, not too far from you guys pretty soon.
Yeah, one of your very last shows is going to be December 27th here at the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. Super awesome venue. The sound
love
in there is, it is unbelievable in the Fiserv. I've been to a number of live music shows, and it is like crackling. You can hear everything. It's really amazing. Mm-hmm. One of the best venues, I think, that's been constructed as of late, just in terms of pure sound quality.
It's awesome. The folks in the audience are wonderful. Your town is wonderful. Your community has embraced us like, you know, like we're coming home. The folks that work there, we've known them for like years now. What was the arena before that one that we used to play at? It's escaped
yeah,
my
the
mind.
Bradley Center. So if the you Bradley go way... Yep, Bradley Center was the most recent one.
And a lot of the staff in the Bradley Center, you know, is over at the Fiserv now. And it's like seeing old friends, you know. Oh, yeah, there's a concert this afternoon. There's a concert tonight. But, you know, we spend more time just catching up on pictures of kids and grandkids. It's such a wonderful time.
I love that. It is one of the things that I think is really unique about Milwaukee. We see a lot of artists, stand-up comics, every kind of music that are like, hey, Can we start or sort of wrap up in and around Milwaukee because mm-hmm. of the very thing that you're talking about, Al? Like, it's many of the same faces. People are super, super chill, very nice, right? And there's a good vibe, and I think I like to think our audiences are some of the best.
They are some of the best. They're awesome. I mean, the fact that we're coming back and we're doing two shows and, you know, people come out, you know, I affectionately refer to some of these people as the repeat offenders who keep coming back year after year, you know. Like, they just want to be part of it. We love being part of the community. I love going to Usinger's. You know, that's like one of my favorite places ever. Like, oh, my God. So there's a lot about the community that we just have shared over the decades of coming through, and I'm just so thrilled that we're coming back. And it's only 2 days after Christmas, so everybody's still going to be in a good mood and happy.
Heck yeah, we might even still be, you know, on some holiday time, which means people will be kicking back a few at the show and hooting and hollering. One of the
all
things
day,
that I want
all night, girl.
Right? Enjoy, so everybody. I love it. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, it's been really interesting to me to kind of some of the stuff that pops off on social media and whatnot about how audiences are changing, right? And I just, you've been on tour now for a while since October, man. That is a long haul. Mm-hmm. For your show and the vibe that you guys create, are you seeing any sort of changes in audiences and how they're responding? Or do you guys kind of get some consistent fans that always are careful to show respect and enthusiasm and are kind of there with you in the vibe?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, the folks that come out and see us year after year know exactly what they're doing. They're celebrating their holidays with us, you know, and I've heard thousands of times, you know, it's not the holidays too. You guys roll through town or we'll play your music in our home from Thanksgiving to Christmas, you know, so there's that consistency. But what I am noticing this year is people are a little calmer. I think every year we get further away from that pandemic of 2020, people are exhaling a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, they're okay with enjoying themselves. And you know what it's noticeable? The afternoon crowds, because usually they're the ones who come in and they're a little more sedate. Now they're getting like just as crazy as the night crowds, which is just so much fun. It's a little bit more energy. So somewhere in between those two, I think, is where we're sitting with the audience.
That's great to hear. I mean, that's one of the things that just it can be so transformative for people at live music shows is this collective sense of euphoria and excitement and energy that can be created. You mentioned something, Alan, I didn't get a chance the last time we hung out to ask you about this, but you just mentioned, you know, folks play your tunes from TSO, you know, starting in Thanksgiving. I'm sure some people earlier in the season, it's been part of how they mark this part of every calendar year. And since I have never been the sort of person that has the reach that you do or gets as many folks bringing me into their living room as you do, what is that? I mean, that is truly an intimate relationship. People attach all kinds of feelings and emotions to hearing your music. What has that been like sort of over the arc of TSO and especially for you as one of the founding members of the orchestra?
Well, it's one of the most complimentary, flattering things anybody could ever say. You know, I mean, as an artist, you know, what Paul O'Neill created so many decades ago, that people, you know, it's not like they listen to the record and say, oh, that's cool, and move on to the next thing. They put it on, like, when I was a kid, I'd watch Rudolph every year. Like, that became my comfy place, you know, or to this day, if I watch Miracle on 34th Street, or it's whatever is your tradition, to become part of people's family holiday tradition, I'm so flattered and so taken back. And also, it's an enormous responsibility, you know, because you don't take things like that for granted. You don't take things like that lightly. So when they say we're coming back next year, or, you know, we've been coming to see you for 5 or 6 years because this is what our family does every year, well, that means we're going to work 10 times harder to make sure that next year's show is even better than this year's, or, you know, this year's show is even better than last year's. You know, we're working on next year's tour already, you know, and we're going to take about 2 weeks off when we all, you know, get home in January, and then pencil goes back to paper. Like, right now, our managers are plotting the routing and what venues are available, where we're going to start, what we're going to do. And then we'll start having our meetings mid-January about, okay, what songs do we want to do next year? What production ideas do we have? How can we make this thing bigger and better? You know,
and do you guys like workshop that? Yeah. Do you get together with your managers and like workshop those ideas? How does that come to be? And while we're at it, tell people a little bit about the flavor of your tour this year and what they can expect.
Well, all year long. So starting middle of January. So, you know, what are we going to do this year? Well, The Ghost of Christmas Eve is, you know, the film that we shot back in 1999. And it really has become just like, you know, a favorite of so many people, myself included. And how are we going to present it this year? How are we going to make it look different? What's the front of the show going to look like? And then the second half of the show, what songs haven't we done in 20 years? You know, what kind of surprises can we have? What can we do that's different and more special? What effects, what production can we come up with that people have never seen before? And that was, you know, pretty much like a 10-month conversation, you know, with all the department heads, the managers, the O'Neill family, everybody involved. Until, and we'll all disagree until we all agree, you know. And we, when no, you know, it's you know, like until everybody goes, yeah, that's a good idea, then we know we're onto something, you know. So it's a lot of back and forth.
No kidding, man. I mean, I work in government.
You know the drill.
It's all just right. It's all disagreement until everybody's like, "Hey, that might be a good idea. Let's do that."
And that's where it starts. And then it's the long conversation, because what would break my heart, you know, I've been there since 1995 when this child, if you will, first opened its eyes. Now it's approaching 30 years old, and I've watched it grow into something that exceeded all my expectations. What would break my heart if anybody ever was in the audience and says, "Ah, I saw him last year. I thought it was better." You know, that's never going to happen. You know, and
that's
and we all
that's a
keep
burden to carry. I mean, that is every year when you go into planning, that's got to be heavy. Like, how are we going to do it better, different, better?
Yeah, but it's we love it. You know, again, it's like your child. You never stop loving your child. You know, even though this is like, you know, hitting 30 years old now, you know, pretty soon, it's still a little baby, you know, and you never stop. Look, I always compare it to, like if you had a dynasty NFL team who won a bunch of Super Bowls, or even anybody who wins a Super Bowl, right? And all of a sudden, like, you know, you're in the middle of March and like all the accolades are in your rearview mirror and like, you know, that was a great season. Well, you got to do it again. And you got to be better than you were last year. You know, if you want a chance at that ring one more time, you're going to work all year long to make sure that it's better and bigger and just different enough to confuse everybody as far as the football team goes. For us, we just want to make it better.
I love that. Love the Super Bowl analogy. Really like the kid analogy too. You know, it's a lifetime that love changes. And certainly the kid grows up and matures and you all get to bring your next great artistic ideas to bear. I really have a lot of respect for the creativity and the collective commitment, all the folks that have to come together to make that happen. These are big tours. We talked about that last time. So many buses, so many moving parts. How many people, remind folks, how many flatbeds, semi trucks do you guys have, and how many people work on your tour?
Well, there's probably about 100 people on the tour. I think I counted 21 tractor trailers and 12 or 13 buses. But then you have the office staff back in New York, you know, who are constantly working on this. You have, you know, it's just a mess. But you got to understand, if you go back to when we first started touring, which is 1999, okay, we had 7 cities on the itinerary, 1 box truck, a bus, and a fog machine. That was it.
Don't forget your fog machine, right?
Never forget my fog machine. And now we got 21 trucks, 12 buses, and a lot more fog machines. But it's grown up, again, going back to the child analogy, it's grown up, you know, over the years. And we never lose sight of it. We never let go of it. You know, even though, you know, my oldest son is 37 years old, you know, he's a grown man. But he's still my baby boy, you know, and he'll always remain my baby boy, you know. And if this is Paul O'Neill's child and the O'Neill family child, then I'm just a weird uncle, you know. But, you know, I love this thing.
Al, somehow I completely believe you when you say that.
What about the weird part? Yeah, no kidding.
Right? Always that uncle, and probably like the most fun uncle. Yeah, most fun uncle, too. Yeah. So tell me, how long are y'all on tour for? Like, how many did you get breaks? Like,
no. Well, we get days off, of course, but we will be out here. I think our last show is going to be in Minneapolis a couple days after you, the day before New Year's Eve, and then we'll all fly home.
Oh, what's that like when you come home?
Awesome. You know,
I can't even imagine.
There's two things I love in my life, you know, my family and my job. Yeah. You know, and those lines are really blurred because most of the people in this organization, we've been together almost 30 years. So they are my family, you know. So when I get to Omaha, Nebraska for the first day of rehearsal, I'm like a kid in the candy store. I, you know, I love it so much. You know,
and
I love it up until I put...
Adult camp. I love it.
It's awesome. And then, you know, I also love when I put my guitar back in my case after the last show and said, all right, I'm going to go home to my wife and my kids. You know, so I'm really fortunate in that regard that I love both sides of the fence equally.
Yeah. Well, listen, from everybody here in Wisconsin, we appreciate you. We really dig what you do. We appreciate the effort. Everybody who's part of the TSO family. Folks, if you want to catch Al Petrelli, one of the founding members of Paul O'Neill's Brainchild, his baby, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, everybody knows the music. We all mark our holidays by it. They're going to be at the Fiserv Forum for two shows on December 27th. You're not going to want to miss that. Al, what's your parting wish to Wisco land here for everybody's holiday?
I just want everybody to stay healthy and stay safe. You know, tell people that you haven't spoken to that you love them. You know, reach out. You know, Paul O'Neill's message in the story is, you know, loss and redemption. You know, so we have the opportunity, you know, somebody's always at the other end of your phone, you know, to say, just to reach out and say hi to. And that empty chair at your dining room table, always hold that memory close to your heart, because like I always say, I'd rather remember somebody and miss them than never to have had them at all in my life, you know. And if everybody just takes like a moment to just kind of acknowledge that, you know, I feel better when I do that anyway.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you for those wishes to the entire state of Wisconsin. I'm going to be looking forward to your show on the 27th. I will try to be there. We've got a couple of friends that I'm trying to wrangle up for a whole evening's worth of
fun. Oh, that sounds like fun.
Heck yeah. Cocktails definitely included. Al, my thanks to you. Safe
travels.
Love
and respect, my dear, always. Have a wonderful holiday season, and please stay safe, and love to your family.
You too, brother. Best wishes to TSO. We will be talking to them again, hopefully next year around this time. I'm Maggie Dawn, everybody. Keep it locked. I'm going to be returning to that red state, blue city problem when we come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show. If you want to join us for our last segment of the day, 844-967-2789.
This night, the dream still wanders.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, joined in the production booth by Anya Esther. Join us for our last segment here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 844-967-2789. Don't forget, you can take us everywhere over the holiday season. It's going to be a lot of fun. And tomorrow, you're going to be wanting to listen to the Pacers-Bucks game. You can hear that. Hello, Oshkosh on WISS Air Support. We are going to be live with the Bucks tomorrow at Richland Center in Amory, Racine, and Park Falls. All good stuff here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to Al Petrelli of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. You can catch them live at the Fiserv Forum. There'll be two shows on December 27th. Go check it out. Everybody, be there or be square. Okay, we're talking about red states deciding how blue cities should govern themselves, despite the fact that it's been local control and small government has been the watchword and guide of the GOP, at least for the entirety of my 46 years here on the planet. We got some texters as I was talking about what is happening in now GOP-controlled Louisiana. And I thought one of the texters' observations was super apt. Like, this governor in Louisiana, Jeff Landry, is going to be holding up money for the city's water infrastructure to basically extort the district attorney in Louisiana, in New Orleans specifically, to extort him into prosecuting women under the state's uber-restrictive abortion laws. Because those two things are related, water and the right of every American to freely select healthcare and conference with your own self-selected medical providers and faith leaders that meet the acceptable standards under the each state's medical regulatory boards. Yeah, It's disgusting. I completely agree with you, but we haven't even gotten to Texas yet. Would anybody surprised that this guy that we were talking about, Attorney General Ken Paxton yesterday on the Maggie Dawn show, is like front and center in some of this nonsense that's going on in Texas? Greg Abbott literally just pushed through with the help of the GOP-controlled legislature in the state of Texas what opponents referred to as the Death Star that has now banned Democratic-dominated cities like Austin and Dallas from doing all sorts of things. Bans on discrimination. Let me just get that. Local governments can't ban discrimination per a new law in Texas. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was banned under the federal constitution. And why are you worried about how local governments are doing that? I thought less discrimination was you know, generally on the plus side, specifically in housing. I mean, guess what hurts folks that are struggling economically the most? It's housing insecurity. Like, that's what puts more women at risk in domestic violence situations. It puts all kinds of folks, not just at the edge, but pushes them over when they're housing insecure. But, you know, Greg Abbott, hey, local governments, don't you regulate housing discrimination? Also blocked a whole bunch of worker protections, like mandatory water breaks during heat waves. Yes, according to Greg Abbott in the state of Texas, local governments can't require water breaks for people during heat waves. I have no idea the way that Texas hot feels. I don't. Here's what. Dear Governor Greg Abbott, I would like you to go out and do the job that one of those workers is doing in the heat that they're doing it without a water break. How about that, Greg? That's the state needs to be worried about local governments guaranteeing water breaks during heat waves. That okay. Mm-hmm. Glad you've got the focus. Here's what he said about these things. Texas small businesses are the backbone of our economy. Burdensome regulations are an obstacle to their success. Forget what he actually just did. I agree with that statement. If regulations aren't working, they're overly complicated, they're hindering innovation, they're prohibiting businesses from growing to supply good paying middle class supporting jobs. Yeah, we should be taking a look at those regulations. That's not what we're talking about here, Greg. We're talking about water breaks and housing discrimination. Like, can we be sophisticated enough to hold these two ideas in our head at the same time? Yes, we should be able to have regulatory systems that promote business and growth, but do so safely, that don't abuse people, that don't place the wealth creation of some on the backs of the many and then turn a calloused ear to people's needs. We can't do those things at the same time. By the way, Houston, some folks out of Houston sued after this, and a Texas judge actually found some of these things unconstitutional. But of course, Greg Abbott and the state government appealed. And we're going to listen to this little bit of sound. Here's one of the current Texas State Supreme Court justices discussing his views on the right of everybody to choose healthcare. If you've got that sound, Anya, this is the Texas Supreme Court justice. If you don't, just tell me if you do or you don't. She doesn't yet. This is just a tease then for tomorrow, everybody.
I want to submit to you that before I ever got in politics, my convictions were forged in the crucibles of the pro-life movement. I ran into a bunch of crazy Catholics, and they talked me into rescuing at abortion clinics. And I rescued in Austin and Corpus Christi and was arrested 37 times. Now, isn't it an irony that today I stand before you as one who could very well win the Texas Supreme Court.
Okay, let's just wrap that there. Irony, that was him as a candidate. That is Justice John Devine. Crazy Catholics, and I was arrested 37 times. So I just break the law ad nauseum. I'll come back tomorrow, everybody, because I'm not done with the red states telling blue cities what they should do. Forget local control. I'm Maggie Dawn. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Come back tomorrow and check us out. I can't wait to hear more from everybody. You be well out there. Stay warm. It's getting warm.